ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Business, big and small, is shaping our economy, our present and our future. But it's a loud and busy world out there, and you need voices you trust to unpack the big stories and ask the right questions. I'm Carrington Clark, host of the new podcast, ABC Business Daily. Monday to Thursday, we take the big business stories and break them down. What happened? Why it happened? Who it helps? Who it hurts? Search for ABC Business Daily on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
As Australians, we've become accustomed to travelling via the Gulf States as we make our way to Europe. But given the war in the Middle East is disrupting the plans of thousands of passengers, should we reconsider our stopover? Today, aviation expert Ian Douglas on the rise of the Gulf Airlines. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Ian, thousands of Australians have been caught up in flight cancellations or delays because of the Iran war so far. You know, they've been stranded in places like Dubai when missiles have been flying overhead.
Thousands of Australians remain stranded, with more than 20,000 flights cancelled across the Middle East due to the conflict.
As the US president warns of Iran's complete destruction, the regime is hitting back, launching drones across the Gulf, hitting the world's busiest airport in Dubai.
Have we actually ever seen anything like that before?
I don't really think so. Air travel has grown so much over time. If we went back to periods like, I don't know, the Vietnam War or whatever, the numbers were so much smaller, the percentage of the population travelling was so much smaller, the aircraft were smaller. So I think this is really the first time that we've seen major aviation routes, major aviation hubs so badly affected and impacted.
Well, some flights have, of course, resumed, although that hasn't gone so well. An Emirates flight via Dubai was going pretty strong until a drone attack at the airport last week.
Flames near the tarmac. A drone hitting a fuel tank at Dubai's airport, forcing flights to be suspended yet again.
As we're speaking, Doha, where Qatar Airways is based, it remains shut. It's like a day-by-day prospect at the moment, isn't it?
It really is, and it has impacts beyond just those countries. Those carriers in Qatar, in Dubai, in Abu Dhabi provide a significant amount of the capacity out of Australia as well. So it's massively disrupting for them at home. It's also causing ripples through connectivity right across the planet.
Yeah, okay. Well, just tell me before we move on, Ian, how did these airlines and the captains of these flights make decisions about whether it is actually safe to fly? Because it is interesting that so many Emirates flights have resumed over the past week or two, but then others are deciding not to do that. So what's the risk assessment here?
I think the first step of that is really not to do anything which puts the aircraft and the passengers at risk. Mm. But beyond that, they have been selecting designated air routes, flying up and away from the conflict zone rather than across it, to get some movement back into those hubs and to get some people back to their homes. But it still brings that element of concern that something could happen. I asked a similar question of an expert the other day who said it's very hard to chase a 380 aircraft with a drone, that once the aircraft is in the air, it's really relatively safe.
Okay,
the concern is more about drones dropping onto the airport itself and to airport buildings infrastructure.
Yeah, the skies are getting pretty crowded at this point, aren't they? Because, of course, they're all having to be rerouted. If you look at, you know, flight tracking websites, they're pretty interesting at the moment. You know, it's really busy north of Iran and Turkey, and then south of Russia and Ukraine. It's just super, super busy. And then there's this big sort of hole in the middle. So it's really having this massive impact on the routes that flights are taking.
Yeah, I flew out of Geneva a couple of days ago on Turkish. So they're relatively lucky as a carrier that their normal track is, in fact, north of Iran, over Turkmenistan, Azerbaijan and that way. So their business is relatively unaffected. But for some of the others who normally track across the Gulf, and even not just the Gulf carriers, but the other airlines that use that airspace, it's been massively disruptive.
Sure has. But, you know, we want them to be doing that because I think we all remember very clearly how critical it is given the shooting down of MH17 over Ukraine in 2014.
Absolutely.
Now, that was a huge game changer, wasn't it, for aviation safety?
Yeah, I think it really was because everyone's expectation then was that the aircraft were flying at an altitude that was safe in that space, and it definitely proved not to be.
Ian, I want to have a look now with you at the rise of these Middle Eastern airlines that fly via the Gulf states, because they have become so hugely popular with Australians, haven't they? Why is that? What did we see?
I think you need three things to run a successful hub. You need aircraft that are capable of getting pretty much anywhere on the planet. And those now exist. You can fly anywhere from the Gulf hubs. You need geography that puts you in the middle of all the traffic flows, which is what you get in the Gulf. And then you need investment. You need owners, in this case always been the government owners, who were prepared to invest in the sort of airport and fleet expansion that you need to build that kind of dominant position.
Mm.
It hasn't happened overnight. It's 30 years since Emirates first flew into Australia. I went to their welcome dinner in Sydney in the ballroom of the Hilton Hotel, and they flew in several tons of audiovisual equipment. It was clear from day one that they were really serious about what they were doing.
And in 2013, of course, Qantas actually partnered up with Emirates.
It's a match made in aviation heaven, the cash-strapped flying kangaroo and the global giant Emirates.
Oh, welcome aboard.
So I gather that was a big moment and a big change for Australian travellers too.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, if we look at the map, you can see how busy things have been around the Gulf. And then you look down at the bottom corner of the South Pacific where we are and where the New Zealanders are. We are really not on the way to pretty much anywhere other than Antarctica. So it's not viable to run a hub south of the equator. And even Singapore is arguably a little too far south and too far east to be completely competitive with the guys in the Gulf. And they have taken that really advantageous geography and a willingness to invest and captured the technology of the new aircraft with greater range to build those hubs. And they now provide a really significant part of the global connectivity from Europe into Asia, from Europe into Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, and Virgin, of course, it partnered with Qatar Airways last year.
The market dominance of Qantas is set to be challenged by the approval of the Virgin Qatar deal. It'll mean more international flights, and consumers will be hoping that leads to lower prices.
So really the two biggest airlines in Australia have really been pushing more Australians to travel via the Gulf states.
Absolutely. And from those Gulf hubs, you have connectivity into often second and third tier cities in Europe in a way that Qantas and Virgin or a European carrier can't compete. So if we looked at the way the market used to be, Qantas was in a handful of cities in Europe, in London, Manchester, Amsterdam, Frankfurt, Paris, Rome, Athens. That's not competitive anymore. When you have carriers like the ones in the Gulf who are serving the smaller cities and with higher frequency, even the European carriers, other than British Airways and Finnair, who are planning to come, gave up on flying through to Australia and either work with their alliance partners in Southeast or Northeast Asia, or just said this market is too far and too difficult and left it to the Gulf hubs.
Yeah, and as Australians, given we have to travel so far to most places and it is really expensive, I guess we don't always consider the transit stop. We're just really looking for the best flight, the lowest cost. But I guess it's easy to lose sight of the fact that you are entering a third country, even if you don't go through passport control. And I guess that's what travellers have found this time is that they've been stuck somewhere that they don't necessarily want to be stuck.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think of the number of flights that leave Australia each day into the Gulf, there are thousands of disruptions every day at the moment. People whose journeys were part completed who are wondering how to get back, people whose journeys were just starting who don't know how they're going to get to where they were heading. And each day that continues, that number of disrupted passengers just increases by thousands.
We got on the airplane and that was literally when they were just starting the attacks.
The luggage, I haven't seen it, don't know where it is. Don't know how to get it. I've just got a small backpack and I've got heart medication that will run out in a few days' time.
It is absolutely good to be home, especially the actual first flight out of Dubai straight to here was fantastic. So, yeah, 2 a.m. was worth it.
My husband's still there. We've got, like, our dogs, our home and stuff's over there. So it's a weird feeling.
I guess we saw the Gulf Nations as a really safe bet for a long time. But it's still in a very volatile region.
Yeah, I think they have been a really safe bet for a long time, and they've provided high-quality service, lots of frequency, connectivity to all the places that we wanted to go.
All right, well, Ian, why don't we consider then whether as consumers we should keep using these routes? You know, they're really good, they're easy to transit through, but when things go wrong, you know, they can go really wrong. So do you think at this point consumers should reconsider travelling through the Middle East in the future? Is it just simply better to go through Asia, to go through Singapore, through Hong Kong? Is that just going to be the better option going forward? Because that is a question a lot of people are now asking.
Yeah, in fact, I'm speaking to you from Singapore coming through Asia on the way back to Australia from Europe. It was the way that I chose to travel back several months ago. Yeah, through Southeast and Northeast Asia are options. There are fewer links than you might get from the Gulf carriers. I think the big winner out of this current problem in the Gulf will be Turkish, for example, who fly to a wide range of cities in Europe and has started flying out of Australia and are connected to all the major cities in Northeast and Southeast Asia. Cathay Pacific, who have an extensive network out of Hong Kong. Singapore Airlines. I think all those carriers will benefit from this because they will be seen as a less risky option while things are unstable in the Gulf. It's likely that the airfares on those carriers will drift upwards because there'll be more demand for those services and not necessarily more capacity provided. Some of the prices are up several hundred dollars in economy, $1,000 odd in business class already. And some of that you'd have to expect while the Gulf carriers are not flying. When they come back, I suspect there'll need to be some more aggressive pricing out of the Gulf to get people back there again, and it'll take them some time to get the traffic flows balanced through those hubs again. So I think it's likely that we will be paying more while fuel is more expensive and while the capacity is still a bit disrupted.
So you think these Gulf carriers, they will suffer a reputational damage? I mean, you know, is that inevitable?
I think they have to. It's inevitable. If you've had your network shut down, if people's plans are disrupted, if there's a degree of uncertainty around the product, I think there is a reputation damage, not necessarily of their own making, but just something that they will have to deal with.
All right. Well, Ian, Australians, of course, we love to travel. But what's your advice at the moment? Should we actually be holding off booking flights through these Middle Eastern carriers? Because, of course, we do like to book rather far in advance as well, don't we? So should we just hold fire at the moment?
Yeah, I'm getting asked that question by almost everybody.
Yes.
I know at the moment. And my advice has been, if you've already got a reservation, hold on to it and watch what happens over the next week or two and see how things are playing out. But if you really have to be somewhere for a wedding or some major event, then you may really want to be looking at an alternative way of getting there, whether it's via, you know, Hong Kong or Tokyo, Singapore, Istanbul, some other way that gets you to a place that you have to be. because there's such a degree of uncertainty around how much longer this will run.
Yeah, and even when it is over, how long do you think it would take for the aviation sector to sort of get back on track, to get back to normal?
Yeah, I think it will be messy for a while because there'll be passengers whose journeys were disrupted outbound, so there'll be empty space on flights coming back, and there'll be people who are partway through journeys who've had to find other ways home. I think it will take a number of weeks, maybe a month or two, before the whole thing really settles back into its normal pattern.
Ian Douglas is a lecturer in aviation management at the Hong Kong Polytechnic University and an honorary senior lecturer at the University of New South Wales. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Cinnamon Nippard. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. To get in touch with the team, please email us on ABC News Daily. abc.net.au. Thanks for listening.